speaking to the crowds, his mother and his brothers were standing outside, wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside waiting to speak to you." But to the one who had told him this, Jesus replied, "Who is my mother? And who are my brothers?" And pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." And may God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. I don't know about you, but I really miss Calvin and Hobbes, Bill Watterson's comic strip. Calvin, of course, the impetuous and sometimes impossible little boy, and his imaginary friend, Hobbes the tiger, who often is the most rational person in the entire comic strip. But on his Mother's Day, I'm reminded of one particular strip. It's a rainy day. Calvin asks, "Can Hobbes and I go play in the rain, Mom?" "No," she answers. "Why not?" "You'll get soaked." "Well, what's wrong with that?" he asks. She answers, "You could catch pneumonia, run up a terrible hospital bill, linger a few months, and die." Calvin turns, looks back out the window as he mutters to himself, "I always forget. If you ask a mom, you always get a worst-case scenario." To which Hobbes has to add, "I had no idea a little rain could be so dangerous." Well, Calvin's interaction with his mother rather reminds me of the interaction of Jesus with his mother in our text for today. As I said, he's just had some major conflict with the scribes and Pharisees. They've accused him of blasphemy for healing on the Sabbath, a serious charge. In turn, he has referred to them as, "You brood of vipers." Opposition to his ministry here in Matthew 12 is building and it's growing dangerous. And so into the middle of all of this come his mother and brothers. They want to speak with him, perhaps, I don't know, offer him a word of support or encouragement. We can't know why they're there, but they know they'd like to have a little time with him. Does he run out and embrace them with open arms, sharing a loving moment with his family? Not even close. And right here, I think we could say that Jesus presents us with kind of a worst-case scenario. He doesn't even get up and acknowledge them. Instead, he asks, "Who is my mother? Who are my brothers?" Another potential Hallmark moment lost forever. What a horrible text for Mother's Day. For the celebration of family and home, Mother Mary comes to him wanting to say, "Let it be." And he basically says to her and his brothers, "Get back to where you once belong." I'm reminded of the story told by Luke of Jesus as a child in the temple. He runs off. His parents can't find him. Finally, when they do find him, they ask, "Why have you treated us like this?" I wonder if Mary was thinking the exact same thing after this most recent encounter. What do you think? Is Jesus putting down the concept of family, something most of us treasure with all of our hearts, something most of us say we would quite willingly die for? I suppose that's possible. Maybe he just wasn't the family type of guy, always late sending the Mother's Day card if he remembered to send one at all. Or could it be there's something else going on here? I'm recently back from a road trip to the Northwest. And I guess I haven't really taken a long automobile trip for a while, and things have changed. I am not exaggerating. I would say that at all, but maybe one or two of rest stops, picnic areas, or gas stations along I-5, I was approached by somebody needing something. A number of stories. My father's dying in Davis in the hospital. I'm trying to get there. Please, could you give me some money for some gas? I'm trying to raise $35. The alternator in our car has gone out. My family and two kids, we've been sleeping in the car now for two nights. Could you help me out? Can I wash your windshield for you? On and on. And, you know, along the way, I'd give somebody a dollar. I also had a whole bag full of chips and cookies. I would give them a little food. But I also confess, as time went on, I think I got less generous. I don't know if the tales of trouble and woe were true. I guess that doesn't even matter. But I have to confess this. I noticed myself thinking as this happened time and time and time again. I'm so thankful I'm not like them. Gosh, I'm happy I'm not one of them. But wait a minute. Am I not the same preacher who from time and time again from this pulpit has said to you that we are called to see the body of Christ in every broken and hurting human body we encounter? We are called to trace the face of Christ in every dirty and grimy face. It was Jesus himself who said, I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. That woman with the empty gas can asking for spare change, I'm her. She's me. Christ in her every bit as much as Christ is in me. And I wonder if in this admittedly challenging text, if this isn't where Jesus is taking us, to a much broader concept of family than we ever thought possible, toward a vision of family that is deeper, wider, more inclusive than a group of people who happen to have the same genetic endowment. Who are my brother, mother, brothers and mother? Who? Look around. No man, no one is an island, said John Donne, entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. And therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Reflecting on these classic words, author Frederick Buechner has said, as we move around this world, and as we act with kindness perhaps, or with indifference, or with hostility toward the people we meet, we are setting the great spider web of life a tremble. The life that I touch for good or ill will touch another life, and that in turn another, until who knows where the trembling stops or in what far place and time my touch will be felt. Our lives are linked together. Me, that woman with the gas can asking for spare change, linked together. I once read about a yearly project at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, just across the river from Fargo, North Dakota. Now, you know, maybe not one of the garden spots of America, but certainly it can be particularly bleak in the winter. But all year, the community anticipates Concordia's annual Christmas concert. Each year, a huge choir, full orchestra, give a musical performance in the concert hall at the college. And every year, the people in the community create a unique background for the concert. A 100 by 30 foot mosaic. Beginning in the summer, about 6 months before Christmas, the community designs a new mosaic, rents an empty building, and the painting begins. Thousands of people, from junior high youth to senior citizens, paint the mosaic. They paint by the numbers. So it becomes a large-scale design with thousands and thousands of small pieces. Day after day, month after month, one piece painted at a time, the picture, the mosaic, gradually takes shape. When everyone is finished painting, an artist goes over the entire creation, perfecting the final work of art. And when it is completed, it is placed behind the choir in the concert hall. And it has the appearance of an enormous, beautiful stained glass window, something like that. The weekend of the concert, the people who help paint it arrive early, along with friends, neighbors, and throughout the building you can hear people whispering, "See that little green spot there beneath the camel? I painted that." Every year, in the middle of the summer, in Moorhead, Minnesota, thousands of unknown, ordinary people paint a tiny, insignificant little tile. 6 months later, this is the result. And that, I submit, is how Jesus wants us to see our lives. Each tiny act of love, caring, every seemingly unimportant choice, every word contributing to the enormous mosaic, which is our human family. And you see, we have the power then to make it beautiful. Every tiny piece, our piece, so vitally important. And here we thought we were so different because of race, clan, gender, religion, economic level, or politics. Again, Jesus insists that family is not so much a matter of which chromosomes we share, but rather whose image we are created in. Says Barbara Brown Taylor, "Jesus' family became huge beyond counting, with lepers and tax collectors and Roman centurions in it, with scruffy-looking men who smelled of fish and ladies in robes made of gold brocade and hordes of squealing children. There was no family tree in his Bible. It was more like a family forest he walked around in, with relatives collected from all over the place. And so, when we meet as strangers, even when friends look like strangers, let us remember that we need each other greatly, you and I, more than much of the time we dare to imagine, more than most of the time we dare to admit. And let us dare to speak the holy and healing word, the loving word, which is, God be with you, stranger, who is no stranger. I wish you well. And who knows? Through all of our not so random words and acts of kindness and caring, we just might produce something that looks a lot like that. For, I guess, a closing prayer. So some words from one of my favorite theologians, Kris Kristofferson. Love is the reason we happened at all, and it paid for the damage we done, and it bought us the freedom to fall into grace on our way to our place in the sun. Every hard rock and wreck on the highway, every heartbroken rule of the road, every true thing we wrote on the wind is still singing. Love is the last thing to go.